Chapter 5. A Gentle Spirit in Revolt. Quarrels began from her, suddenly beginning to pay out loans on her own account, to price things above their worth, and even on two occasions she deigned to enter into a dispute about it with me. I did not agree, but then the captain's widow turned up. This old widow brought a medallion, a present from her dead husband, a souvenir, of course. I lent her 30 rubles on it. She fell to complaining, begged me to keep the thing for her. Of course, we do keep things. Well, in short, she came again to exchange it for a bracelet that was not worth 8 rubles. I, of course, refused. She must have guessed something from my wife's eyes. Anyway, she came again when I was not there, and my wife changed it for the medallion. Discovering it the same day, I spoke mildly, but firmly and reasonably. She was sitting on the bed, looking at the ground and tapping with her right foot on the carpet, her characteristic movement. There was an ugly smile on her lips. Then, without raising my voice in the least, I explained calmly that the money was mine, that I had a right to look at life with my own eyes, and that when I had offered to take her into my house, I had hidden nothing from her. She suddenly leapt up, suddenly began shaking all over, and, what do you think? She suddenly stamped her foot at me. It was a wild animal. It was a frenzy. It was the frenzy of a wild animal. I was petrified with astonishment. I had never expected such an outburst. But I did not lose my head. I made no movement, even. And again, in the same calm voice, I announced plainly that from that time forth I should deprive her of the part she took in my work. She laughed in my face and walked out of the house. The fact is, she had not the right to walk out of the house. Nowhere without me. Such was the agreement before she was married. In the evening she returned. I did not utter a word. The next day, too, she went out in the morning, and the day after again. I shut the shop and went off to her aunt's. I had cut off all relations with them from the time of the wedding. I would not have them to see me, and I would not go to see them. But it turned out that she had not been with them. They listened to me with curiosity and laughed in my face. "It serves you right," they said, but I expected their laughter. At that point, then, I bought over the younger aunt, the unmarried one, for 100 rubles, giving her 25 in advance. 2 days later she came to me. "There's an officer called Yefimovich mixed up in this," she said, "a lieutenant who was a comrade of yours in the regiment." I was greatly amazed. That Yefimovich had done me more harm than anyone in the regiment, and about a month ago, being a shameless fellow, he once or twice came into the shop with a pretense of pawning something, and I remember began laughing with my wife. I went up at the time and told him not to dare to come to me, recalling our relations. But there was no thought of anything in my head. I simply thought that he was insolent. Now the aunt suddenly informed me that she had already appointed to see him, and that the whole business had been arranged by a former friend of the aunt's, the widow of a colonel, called Yulia Samsonovna. "It's to her," she said. "Your wife goes now." I will cut the story short. The business cost me 300 rubles, but in a couple of days it had been arranged that I should stand in an adjoining room behind closed doors and listen to the first rendezvous between my wife and Yefimovich tête-à-tête. Meanwhile, the evening before, a scene, brief but very memorable for me, took place between us. She returned towards evening, sat down on the bed, looked at me sarcastically, and tapped on the carpet with her foot. Looking at her, the idea suddenly came into my mind that for the whole of the last month, or rather the last fortnight, her character had not been her own. One might even say that it had been the opposite of her own. She had suddenly shown herself a mutinous, aggressive creature. I cannot say shameless, but regardless of decorum and eager for trouble. Her gentleness hindered her, though. When a girl like that rebels, however outrageously she may behave, one can always see that she is forcing herself to do it, that she is driving herself to do it, and that it is impossible for her to master and overcome her own modesty and shamefacedness. That is why such people go to such lengths at times, so that one can hardly believe one's eyes. One who is accustomed to depravity, on the contrary, always softens things, acts more disgustingly, but with a show of decorum and seemliness, by which she claims to be superior to you. "Is it true that you were turned out of the regiment because you were afraid to fight a duel?" she asked suddenly, apropos of nothing, and her eyes flashed. "It is true that by the sentence of the officers I was asked to give up my commission, though as a fact I had sent in my papers before that."
"You were turned out as a coward?"
"Yes, they sentenced me as a coward, but I refused to fight a duel not from cowardice, but because I would not submit to their tyrannical decision and send a challenge when I did not consider myself insulted. You know," I could not refrain from adding, "that to resist such tyranny and to accept the consequences meant showing far more manliness than fighting any kind of duel. I could not resist it. I dropped the phrase, as it were, in self-defense, and that was all she wanted, this fresh humiliation for me." She laughed maliciously.
"And is it true that for 3 years afterwards you wandered about the streets of Petersburg like a tramp, begging for coppers and spending your nights in billiard rooms?"
"I even spent the night in Vierzhimsky's house in the Haymarket. Yes, it is true. There was much disgrace and degradation in my life after I left the regiment, but not moral degradation, because even at the time I hated what I did more than anyone. It was only the degradation of my will and my mind, and it was only caused by the desperateness of my position. But that is over."
"Oh, now you are a personage, a financier."
A hint at the pawnbroker's shop. "But by then I had succeeded in recovering my mastery of myself. I saw that she was thirsting for explanations that be humiliating to me, and I did not give them. A customer rang the bell very opportunely, and I went out into the shop. An hour later, when she was dressed to go out, she stood still, facing me, and said,
'You didn't tell me anything about that, though, before our marriage.'
I made no answer, and she went away. And so next day I was standing in that room, the other side of the door, listening to hear how my fate was being decided, and in my pocket I had a revolver. She was dressed better than usual, and sitting at a table, and Yefimovitch was showing off before her. And after all, it turned out exactly, I say it to my credit, as I had foreseen and had assumed it would, though I was not conscious of having foreseen and assumed it. I do not know whether I express myself intelligibly. This is what happened. I listened for a whole hour. For a whole hour I was present at a duel between a noble, lofty woman and a worldly, corrupt, dense man with a crawling soul. And how, I wondered in amazement, how could that naive, gentle, silent girl have come to know all that? The wittiest author of a society comedy could not have created such a scene of mockery, of naive laughter, and of the holy contempt of virtue for vice. And how brilliant her sayings, her little phrases were! What wit there was in her rapid answers, what truths in her condemnation! And, at the same time, what almost girlish simplicity! She laughed in his face at his declarations of love, at his gestures, at his proposals. Coming coarsely to the point at once, and not expecting to meet with opposition, he was utterly nonplussed. At first I might have imagined that it was simple coquetry on her part, the coquetry of a witty though depraved creature to enhance her own value. But no, the truth shone out like the sun, and to doubt was impossible. It was only an exaggerated and impulsive hatred for me that had led her, in her inexperience, to arrange this interview. But when it came off, her eyes were opened at once. She was simply in desperate haste to mortify me, come what might. But though she had brought herself to do something so low, she could not endure unseemliness. And could she, so pure and sinless, with an ideal in her heart, have been seduced by Yefimovitch or any worthless snob? On the contrary, she was only moved to laughter by him. All her goodness rose up from her soul, and her indignation roused her to sarcasm. I repeat, the buffoon was completely nonplussed at last, and sat frowning, scarcely answering, so much that I began to be afraid that he might insult her from a mean desire for revenge. And I repeat again, to my credit, I listened to that scene almost without surprise. I met, as it were, nothing but what I knew well. I had gone, as it were, on purpose to meet it, believing not a word of it, not a word said against her, though I did take the revolver in my pocket, that is the truth. And could I have imagined her different? For what did I love her? For what did I prize her? For what had I married her? Oh, of course, I was quite convinced of her hate for me, but at the same time I was quite convinced of her sinlessness. I suddenly cut short the scene by opening the door. Yefimovitch leapt up. I took her by the hand and suggested she should go home with me. Yefimovitch recovered himself, and suddenly burst into loud peals of laughter. "Oh, to sacred conjugal rights, I offer no opposition. Take her away, take her away. And you know," he shouted after me, "though no decent man could fight you, yet from respect to your lady I am at your service, if you are ready to risk yourself." "Do you hear?" I said, stopping her for a second in the doorway. After which, not a word was said all the way home. I led her by the arm, and she did not resist. On the contrary, she was greatly impressed, and this lasted after she got home. On reaching home, she sat down in a chair and fixed her eyes upon me. She was extremely pale, though her lips were compressed ironically. Yet she looked at me with solemn and austere defiance, and seemed convinced in earnest for the minute that I should kill her with the revolver. But I took the revolver from my pocket without a word and laid it on the table. She looked at me and at the revolver. Note that the revolver was already an object familiar to her. I had kept one loaded ever since I opened the shop. I made up my mind when I set up the shop that I would not keep a huge dog or a strong manservant, as Moser does, for instance. My cook opens the doors to my visitors, but in our trade it is impossible to be without means of self-defense in case of emergency, and I kept a loaded revolver. In early days, when first she was living in my house, she took great interest in that revolver and asked questions about it, and I even explained its construction and working. I even persuaded her once to fire at a target. Note all that. Taking no notice of her frightened eyes, I lay down on the bed, half undressed. I felt very much exhausted. It was by then about 11 o'clock. She went on sitting in the same place, not stirring, for another hour. Then she put out the candle, and she, too, without undressing, lay down on the sofa near the wall. For the first time she did not sleep with me. Note that, too.